Hey guys, Mubarak Shah here, CPA, M&A advisor here at Corp Dev World. And today we're going to talk about the art of actually selling your business. All right, we're going to talk about what it actually looks like once you're in that LOI stage and what happens. Okay, so obviously at this point, you know, we're just trying to take you behind the scenes of if you're whether you're a buyer and you're talking to a business that you want to acquire, right? What you've probably done at this point is that you've had several conversations with the buyer or with the seller or the partners or so, depending on what type of business you're buying. And usually it takes a couple of weeks to a couple of months before you get to the actual table and prepare what's called an LOI or a letter of intent. And that's basically the real, it's non-binding, so it's not like official, and you know, almost one in out of every four LOIs actually fall through. One out of every four go through, meaning three out of every four fall through. So just because you have a signed LOI doesn't mean that you're going to end up having a closed deal. But it's similar to like if you think about real estate, like a pre-qualification, right? So you're kind of pre-approved for being able to buy this house, and you've kind of maybe put in an earnest money deposit or EMD or whatever, and now you're actually at the table or trying to get everything set up to be able to sell your business, right? So the timing is important because you're going to need to now flesh out 3, 4, maybe even 6 months to be able to get it done, because unlike real estate, which also sometimes takes time, businesses are usually a lot more complicated, usually have different variables that influence them and that affect, you know, the kind of output that you'll end up having. And so there's a lot of different diligence that needs to occur when it comes to, you know, buying a business. So what typically happens is that the buyer at this point is going to want to, you know, they might have asked for some items in the past, depending on if you're working with a broker or not. As a seller, you might have put together a data room of some of your financials and some information about the business. But now this is where everything gets exposed, right? So the LOI will establish a time frame, maybe 60, 90, 120 days. So anywhere from like 2 to 4 months to be able to actually close on the business. And I know some companies do it a little different. Like I know acquire.com sometimes has smaller periods of this, but in general, if you're looking at any business higher than say 500K in EBITDA or profit, or if you're about to drop, you know, six figures or seven figures of your hard earned money, or getting a loan for that much, or putting a personal guarantee, right? You want to make sure that you're buying the right business. And so you're going to do a few different things, right? You have to basically finish fleshing out a full data room. And so that means preparing all your documents, right? You don't have to necessarily have a CPA give you audited financials or reviewed financials. It does help, and it does give more faith to the buyer. But, you know, we've seen companies in the millions of dollar ranges selling for, you know, eight figures that don't have these reviewed or audited financials. So it's okay. And the reason for that is because the buyer is probably going to do something called a QOE or quality of earnings. And they're going to get that information or get that kind of third party diligence done, which is usually required by any bank or any investor, because it gives them confidence in the financials of the business selling, right? So the seller, they might have had an accountant, they might have had an outsourced firm that does their books, but again, you don't necessarily know as a buyer whether everything is fully, you know, legit, not in terms of like any kind of, you know, malicious manner, but in general, accounting is pretty complicated. You know, CPAs go to school for 5 years and then sit through an incredibly difficult exam to be able to understand the proper GAAP requirements of financial statements. And so, you know, that's just something to keep in mind. But the buyer is probably also going to engage in different levels of diligence at this point that you as a seller need to be okay with. All right. So what they're going to do is like, okay, the accountants will start and start getting all the financial statements, but then you're going to have the legal team too. And what they're going to start doing is they're going to start reviewing all of the contracts that your business has had signed or has active, right? That has to do with customer agreements. They want to verify that. That has to do with the vendor agreements, you know, who are your suppliers, who are the maybe the software providers you work with. The usually the buyer from what we've seen, what we've kind of seen in the past, is the buyer will be engaged in more of like the customer diligence, meaning they'll probably want to talk to a few of the company's customers and understand, you know, how that's working and whether or not that's, you know, a positive facet and whether they're going to stick with the business. You know, usually without scaring them away, they're not going to announce any sale at that point. But as a seller, you shouldn't be surprised if a buyer wants to figure out, you know, wants to talk to any of your customers, right? They just want to get an understanding as to how the customers feel about your product or service, whether they're more interested in having it, you know, what other service offerings they can have at this point. Because a buyer, right, obviously they want to buy your business, but the only reason they're buying your business is because they feel that they can probably grow it and scale it. And so what they're trying to identify in their diligence is, hey, if I take this business over, what opportunities do I have to be able to scale the company and make more profit from it? So you as a seller, you really hold the keys and can control the outcome, right? If you can prepare this beforehand, and maybe, you know, you as a seller, you probably thought of tens or hundreds of different ideas of how to scale your business and other revenue potentials and income streams that you could capitalize on, but you might have just not had the time or the energy or the team to be able to execute on that. Well, if you put that together and prepare that in the data room or provide that to the buyer, that'll just get them really excited and motivated. And it's something we help our clients with and we really recommend people do, because it gives you that energy and it gives you that optimized kind of motivation for the buyer, because now they can go to their bank and they can go to their investors and they already have, even though they might not be masters of your space, right? They might be new to the industry. They might be an MBA grad running a search fund. They might be in private equity that's scaling into a new vertical. So it's not necessary that the buyer of your business is more proficient in your business than you, right? Usually the seller of a business, usually the owner, probably has extreme amount of experience and knowledge within the space, within the geography that they're participating in, within the customer niche that they're targeting, that any buyer is just not going to come in with. And so if you can provide that information and sell that future potential, you as the seller would be able to actually benefit from a better bottom line and a better purchase price, right? Because the purchase price, just like anything in business and anything in life really, is all negotiable. So yes, you might have a third party valuation company come in and tell you that your business is worth X. And you know, the buyer might be telling you, hey, I think it's only worth this much, right? They might be looking at your cash flows or your historicals, but you know, tech companies, for example, are a great example, or venture capital. You know, all of these tech companies that are losing money, but they get invested in with millions of dollars from venture capital, is a clear indication that investors and buyers, they want the future potential, right? They want to know what they could potentially do if they ran the company appropriately, how much money they could make from the business. And so by strategically setting up your business sale process and kind of getting ahead of some of these areas, you can really make this a great outcome for yourself, right? And it's going to require a team, right? That's usually why we recommend that sellers, you know, maybe it's probably not a good idea to go into business, like into a business sale yourself, unless you have some M&A experience in the past, just because, like, you know, just anything in general, right? You could fix your own car if you want to spend the time to learn it, but it's usually better to just go to a mechanic who will handle it. And yes, you might have to put some money out of pocket, but they're at least an expert because that's what they spend their full time doing, right? So that's kind of the main strategy that we wanted to talk about in this episode. But I also do want to equip you with some questions that you can ask. And this is kind of taken from Adam Coffey, the Exit Strategy Playbook. But I think it's really great because when you finally are down at the table, and whether you're pre-LOI or post-LOI, and again, that's the letter of intent, you know, the buyer is going to be asking you questions, and they're going to ask questions to be able to gauge how sophisticated of a seller you are. And just like in any negotiation, right, you want to be able to kind of have the power and have kind of the edge. And so you want to have some questions to be able to ask. And again, it depends, and we've done another episode on this that I'll link in the description of like what are different types of buyers that might come in, whether they're financial, right? So think of like a private equity fund, a search fund, an investor, management buyout teams, right? So if you ask these questions to these potential buyers, they'll know that you know what you're talking about, and it'll increase the respect level and the overall kind of negotiation prowess that you'll have going into these conversations. So some questions might be like, what is the total AUM or assets under management at your firm, right? So AUM is like a key indicator of the size of a firm. You can ask, what fund are you currently investing out of, right? So like funds, you know, usually these private equity firms or so will, or asset management firms, they'll have different funds, and that'll kind of indicate, you know, how new they are. Or, you know, for example, if they're telling you they're investing out of fund one, that's usually a new firm. Whereas a fund five means that, you know, if they've been around the block and they've been in this space for decades. You can ask about how large their current fund is. You can talk to them about what management incentive equity is. So what that means basically is like, what is the benefit or what is going to be the equity pool that your management or C-level team gets, right? So again, this might not be something that you even thought that you're going to do, right? You might just want to sell the company as 100% owner, or you and your wife own it, or you and a business partner. But when you ask questions like that, it kind of has them take a step back, because now what they need to do is they think that you're probably going to want to ask for more, or they're going to need to give you more to reach your, you know, desired purchase price. And so it really gets them thinking and puts you in that level of kind of power where now you're able to kind of negotiate better, right? You need to definitely ask them what their expectation is for what's called a rollover investment or seller's equity. And basically that just means that a lot of these financial buyers, or just through any business acquisition, usually the buyer wants the seller to keep a little bit of equity in the business going forward. That's not always the case, but it's usually recommended. It probably happens about 80% of the time. And the reason for that is because the buyer then gets more confidence that if the seller is willing to, hey, take, you know, put in 10% or 15% equity in the new company, that, hey, at least they have a legitimate business, right? The seller is going to be around to help with the transition, and they're going to be incentivized to help out if any issues arise in the business, which obviously they will, because businesses always have issues and fires and things to put out. And so if you as a seller, first of all, when you bring up the conversation, again, that elevates you in a position from a negotiation standpoint. But it's also something that you should be comfortable doing, because that'll give confidence to the buyer that you're willing to stand behind your business and willing to take maybe a smaller paycheck today in terms of, you know, if you, what that means is that, you know, let's say you're selling your business for $1 million, right? And you do 10% seller rollover or rollover equity, right? What that means is that then that 10% of that purchase price is $100,000. What that means is that you're not going to get $1 million at close. Instead, you're agreeing to take only $900,000, right? If the seller rollover equity is 10%, that you're only going to take a $900,000 purchase price, because the other $100,000 is going to be rolled forward into the new equity or into the post-acquisition business. And so you will no longer be 100% owner of the company or have as much equity as you did before, but now you still have that 10% in the new business. So that really incentivizes buyers, because one, on the most simple basis, right, they don't have to put up as much cash to buy the business. And that's helpful because, you know, they'll probably have to take less debt, or their investors will have to put up less money. And so they're happy about that. But then also they feel confident that you're going to be around if there's any issues. And what it's usually referred to in the industry as the second bite of the apple, which means that, okay, yes, maybe you sold your business for $1 million today and you kept 10% in, so you lost out on that $100,000 that you could have gotten. But what may happen is in 5 years down the line, the company, they might have grown it, they might have scaled it up if everything works out, and now they'll sell the company for $5 million and you still have that 10% of the business. And so that $100,000 that you might have gotten if you didn't do the rollover equity now becomes $500,000 when the company sells for a second time. And so that's what we see a lot of the times that sellers benefit from, and something to keep in mind. So hopefully that makes sense. Hopefully that gave you some insight into more about the actual sales process of a business and how you as a seller can equip yourself to be successful when talking with business buyers and getting into those negotiations. But as always, feel free to reach out. We'll put our email in the description below and hope to hear from you guys soon. Take care.